Welcome back to episode two of
season.
We have Sly, of course, today, since she's our regular co-host this season.
Moving on up.
So how was your first week back at work, school?
Interesting. So many review sessions on rules and expectations.
Of course.
And what's going to happen if we continue to break those rules?
I could hear that click.
That's okay. The audience is allowed to know that I hydrate and I'm taking good care of myself, because that is what we need to do in the insanity that is teaching these days.
Okay, so I learned from a co-teacher that if you drink water, you can't cry. And so now every time we want to cry or something comes up, we drink water, or, you know, we might be talking about a situation, be like, hey, just drink some water. It works. No, if you actively are drinking the water, you cannot cry. It's very weird, but it works. I've tried it more than once.
I will literally go, I will stop, drink the water and go, oh, that was good. And then go right back to crying because my thought cycle will circle right back to
it. I want you to try it and see what happens.
Welcome to Bad Teacher Tales, real talk stories and advice for teachers and those who love them, where each week we share the good, the bad, and the what the hell of daily teacher life. We'll expose workplace woes that range from unrealistic to impossibly asinine. We'll postulate on parental problems and admin antics. We might even learn a helpful tip or trick. And while we may be bad teachers, we will always leave remembering our why. Those beautiful, bright, baffling students. With your hosts, Scara and Sly. The opinions read in this episode do not necessarily reflect those of the hosts or Bad Teacher Tales. Some language and situations may be unsuitable for children. Ironic, I know. Listener discretion is advised.
The main story today is called, It's the PTSD for Me.
Oh no.
This is a middle school band director and teacher from Houston, Texas. She says, probably the biggest mistake I've made in my teaching career was staying somewhere that indirectly discouraged open communication between teachers by taking every little backhanded teacher complaint seriously, especially if it was from a select few golden children of the school.
We love favoritism on the staff. That's great.
I've seen it happen enough times now that with small issues and I've seen it happen enough time now with small issues and big ones, and it's definitely given me the ick. But why do we keep having teachers go to the principal before they go to the other person in question?
Having a moment of wondering, was this my story? Because this sounds so familiar.
Yeah, I have never lived in this space working, thankfully, but I've had enough conversations with teachers to know that this is a pretty common occurrence.
I worked at a school like this where the teachers, like the golden children, mm-hmm. and by golden children, we mean adults, grown adults who actively discourage tattling in their own classrooms, go and tattle to the principal, literally 15 feet away from me, tattling about me.
What? Well, first of all, I don't even let my 7-year-old tattletale. The adults shouldn't be doing it.
If you are telling people in your class not to do this, you probably shouldn't be doing it yourself. But correct. Also, as a principal, you should not be allowing that.
Right.
As a principal, you should be like, your very first question when someone says, I have an issue with this teacher is, did you talk to them about it first? If you haven't talked to them, don't bring it to me.
Exactly.
But nope, we didn't do that.
Yeah. And that's how my principals have handled things.
Because that's professional.
Frankly, I've witnessed and lived it enough times that I live in a constant state of paranoia about what may or may not be going on behind my back. Oh, that's an awful feeling.
It is. And it really kind of leads into our thing last week about are there teachers out there that don't have anxiety, that don't wonder if they're getting fired every other day?
Well, like, it's not this one. So even in a situation that I'm 98.9% sure, that's a very specific percentage. I love it. So even in a situation that I'm 98.9% sure that it's not even a possibility, the anxiety, there it goes, really creeps in. My fears have subsided over the years, but I'm not exaggerating when I say I've experienced PTSD from this. Like, I get that, right? So if you are used to a principal that actively encourages the tattletelling and doesn't expect you or doesn't want you to go and solve things yourself, then you are in, I can only imagine being in that state of, oh, so-and-so's going to go tell on me because I said something wrong.
But then it also lends to like, well, why are we having all these issues with the kids and why is tattletelling such a problem and why can't they solve their own problems? Because the teachers don't even want to do that. So you know they're not teaching the kids how to do it.
Yeah, they're not telling them how to work through it. And that's something I was going to say. I have approached a principal before and been like, hey, I don't know how to approach this. Mm-hmm. Please help. And for me, it wasn't like, let me tell you what's a problem so that you can take care of it. I know it's my responsibility to solve my problems because I'm an adult.
Right.
But maybe I don't know what the most appropriate professional way is to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the principal is like the parent that should be stepping in and saying, okay, do this, try this.
Or mediate
if they need to. She says, you know, I've seen it rewarded, but I've also been around long enough to know that it's usually temporary. So the young teacher, who thinks they're safe, relaxes enough that they're taken by surprise when a few years down the road, someone does it to them. And at the end of the day, it's a reflection on administration.
But then they also can't figure out why teachers leave and why they have such bad turnaround. But then the administrators encourage behavior like this.
Right. And
maybe not encourage, but enable it.
Right. And if you're a young teacher thinking, oh, hey, I'm safe, I can tattletell. But then a couple years down the road, it's you who's being tattletailed on because that's been encouraged.
Or God forbid you were the golden child and then you messed up in a way that you are no longer the golden child because that's very conditional.
Temporary, so, like yep. She says.
So, God forbid, it turns back on you and you're like, that's not okay.
At the end of the day, it's a reflection on administration and campus culture. And my warning to young teachers would be to keep your head down. And if you can't, it's time to move to a new campus. And the campus culture is the outcome of the administration allowing this, mm-hmm. I think.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think that it's necessarily campus culture that creates the anxiety, but...
Mm-mm. It's if your administration enables and allows this behavior, your school becomes very cliquey. And there's clearly the people that you cannot tell where the principal ends and they start, if you catch my drift.
Yep.
And that's not a good culture
right.
to work in. Having been there and done this, it's not a good culture. It's toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes so much stress because you start to question, is every little thing, especially because you said she's a band director, right?
Yes.
Especially because band directors' jobs are very public. We take our test publicly. And I say we because I'm also in the fine arts, but we take our test publicly 3 to 4 times a year. And then we also have to go take tests out in public and do things like that. And so there's so much for us that can be nitpicked that becomes so stressful. I can completely understand how she has PTSD.
Right.
And it's hard because then you move into a new campus and you get there and you're just, it takes a while to be able to relax enough to settle in your role and not overly stress.
Well, it sounds like that's the problem is she can go to a new school, but still feel like it could happen at any moment mm-hmm. because she was conditioned to expect it.
Mm-hmm. And that is a problem.
Why do we do this, Sly? Well, let me tell you. This is a middle school librarian in Missouri City, Texas. She says, a librarian I follow on Twitter shares her seasonal themed scavenger hunts.
Ooh, this sounds fun.
I kind of want to do a seasonal themed scavenger hunt.
Same.
In a library?
I just kind of want to do a scavenger hunt. Like, this sounds fun.
I can set that up for you.
Yay.
Do you not remember the scavenger hunt we did on our summer Saturdays?
Yeah, but the kids did it. And I stood around and watched.
Our October scavenger hunt was a huge success, but It was super easy. I discovered that the Twitter librarian had two versions of the November scavenger hunt. One where you just look for the turkey around the library, and one with clues that points you to the location the turkey will be. I chose the second option because I wanted my kids to understand how to use the nonfiction section, and ELA is in their informational unit.
Oh, I like this.
I wonder if it's on like page something or other of a certain book, and you have to like use the cute clues to find the... Okay, I'm going to keep going.
This is what a planning period should be for, is stuff like this. I love this. I love this so much.
The fun stuff.
Yes.
I modified the scavenger hunt for my library. I cut out 12 turkeys on my Cricut and made 8 of them super easy to be seen. I took one of the remaining 4 turkeys and put it in the fiction section on the book and the last 3 in the nonfiction. I made sure my clues pointed them to the call numbers, but the tricky part was that my kids would have to use the catalog.
Oh boy.
The Dewey Decimal System.
I hope it's in a drawer with a bunch of little 3x5 cards.
Man, this is taking me back to elementary school.
And torture. And
I really thought the Dewey Decimal System was going to be a bigger part of my life than it actually has turned out to be.
Is it any part of your life whatsoever?
No, except remembering that the Dewey Decimal System is a thing that nobody knows is a thing anymore unless you were growing up in like before the 90s or the 90s and before. But I really thought it'd be a bigger part of my life for how much stress they put on learning to use it. Yeah, you want to freak your kids out? Tell them you're older than Google. They stare at you as they try to compute that. They're like, wait, what? That's right, children. I have lived longer than Google. They don't know what to do with that.
I wanted them to become more independent, so I made sure to tell them that I won't be helping them with the scavenger hunt. A bunch of 8th graders came by when the scavenger hunt was ready, and I warned them that it might be a bit tricky compared to the last one. They found the first 8 turkeys and yelled, "Miss, are you sure this is so easy?" Ha ha ha. Then they get to the difficult ones. Uh-huh. One of the clues mentions that a turkey wants to learn about sharks. The kids ask me, "Where are the shark books?" I replied that I don't know.
I just work here.
I can totally like, I don't know. it's like playing hide and seek with a little kid. Where's Bobby? I don't see Bobby. Do you see Bobby? Where's Bobby? I don't know. But meanwhile, his whole rear end is sticking up out from the couch. Right? So I replied I didn't know. They couldn't believe me that I wouldn't help them, starting to say that I was the one who created it. They just started wandering the library to find the remaining 4 turkeys. But
yes,
they couldn't.
They should.
Well, no, they're supposed to like use the clues.
Well, yes. But clearly they don't know where the nonfiction section is. So wandering the library is their best bet at this point.
But they couldn't find them because they're hidden on the covers of the books in that section. The next day, the same kids come back with a few new friends trying to find the sharks and sign language turkeys.
They had to phone a friend, for real.
No, they had to bring a friend. Finally, a kid runs over to the computer and types in sharks. He shouts, "Yes, I got it." Runs over to that section, pulls out all the books, and finds the turkey hiding on the book.
Look at that. That's the smart friend. That's the smart friend.
That was a good choice to choose.
Oh, yes.
So he does the same for the sign language turkey. And as I'm giving him his prize for completing the challenge, he says, "You're actually pretty smart, miss."
Shocker.
They say that a lot. That you're,
they
you're
really
like,
do.
Yep. Uh-huh. That's why I have the degree and
that
I'm the
teacher.
That
was a great idea. Yep.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thought of it myself.
I reply, "What makes you say that?" And he goes, "I don't know." He goes, "I didn't know you could learn sign language from the library. I thought all these books were boring, but I actually might check out that sign language book so I can speak to my friend's little sister. She's deaf, and you taught me something new by not helping me."
Oh, I love it so much.
That took a really good turn.
It did. I loved it.
I was totally not
expecting
it.
But I love that he added, like, not just for my information, but for actual practical use to do something good in the world. Like, I love
to
that.
To be kind to somebody else.
I love that. And show inclusion. I love it.
Yeah. I totally was just, I thought this was just going to be like, yay, I learned how to find the books. Thanks.
Yeah, so did I. I didn't think it was going to have that feel good moment at the end. That was really rewarding.
Like, extra feel good moment.
Oh, that was nice. Oh. I think that's been one of my favorite Why We Do This so far.
That's a really good one.
That was a good one. Books, good feelings. It was almost had the makings of a Hallmark movie.
This Things That Work is from a sixth grade social studies teacher from Sugarland, Texas. And this teacher submitted six great tips, and I loved them all. So instead of just choosing one or two, I'm just going to read a couple for the next few episodes. How's that sound? Great. Cool. So the first two.
All right.
As a geography teacher, giving map quizzes where they can use their maps instead of just turning their maps in for a grade has helped me maintain my sanity. There's just no way.
Can you pause for a second and reread the first sentence? Because I was busy singing, "Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?" I missed the entire thing of what we were supposed to be talking about there.
Oh, you know I'm not taking that out, right?
No. Okay.
All right. As a geography teacher.
I got that part.
Giving map quizzes. Is that all? Quizzes. That's pretty much is all you
that's
got, right?
That's what I missed right
you,
there.
You heard the word map and
I heard geography.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
That Where was, is she?
I heard nothing else after that.
Okay. So she is giving map quizzes where the students can use their maps on the quiz. I'm guessing like if, because I've done this before. If you make the map, then you can use the map on your quiz. But if you don't make the map, then it sucks for you, kid.
Use your brain.
So instead of grading the map, because there's just no way, she says, that I'd be able to read 170 maps labeled illegibly and grade them. So she's like, hey, as long as you do your map, you can use it on your quiz. And I don't have to look at all your illegible crazy maps. And you get some help. As long as you do it, which is exactly what I do for my vocab quizzes every week. Because I'm like, I just want an easy grade that really is, I call it a grade booster, right? Should be an easy 100. It's only five words. As long as they write their words down at the beginning of the week, they can use like their own written words at the end of the week to take their quiz. And it's been glorious because now they actually write it down and then learn them.
Hey.
And most of them don't even need it by the end of the week because they like did the thing that I said to do in the first place. It's like reverse psychology.
It is. I love reverse psychology.
Same. So the second tip she sent in is she says, now this sounds super OCD, but I love it.
This sounds like it's right up my alley.
I love OCD too. Don't worry, girl. At the beginning of the year, I create my seating chart on a PowerPoint, and then I print a few extra copies so that I can keep track of bathroom passes, missing work, tardies, warm-ups, participations, etc., all on my PowerPoint seating chart.
Ooh, I like this.
She says, this has been a huge game changer in so many ways.
I would like pictures of what this, like, can you send in an example of the PowerPoint, change names, leave it blank, whatever you need to do. But like kind of, I would love to see like a picture like midway through so I can see like,
what does it look like?
What does it look like as you're using it?
That's a good question. It's like mid-year right now. I can imagine if like she has it from last semester.
Maybe like six, I would imagine like six things, like one that's just you cross off who's done warm-ups, you cross off who's gone to the bathroom. Like how do you, like I'd love to see like,
process. Yeah, because I keep track of all that in my, like my planner has a grade, basically it's a, you know, grading book at the back, but instead I use it for that kind of thing so that everybody has done all the things.
I never thought about that. That's good.
Because I'm not going to use it as a grade book.
What?
That would inquire math.
Thank you for listening to Bad Teacher Tales. If you enjoyed this content, consider supporting us on Patreon or contribute a one-time payment to help offset monthly costs, as this is a self-produced, directed, edited, and funded production. Information and links are located in the show notes. Any support is appreciated. To submit a story for consideration, follow the link in the episode notes to the Google form. All submissions are anonymous to our listeners. For podcast updates or to interact with the host, join the Facebook group, Bad Teacher Tales-Podcast, or follow on Instagram and X at Bad Teacher Tales. Scara is a lifelong learner and educator. Recently becoming a National Board Certified Teacher, Scara serves as the Fine Arts Department Head, Head Theater Director, Dance Team, and Pep Squad Coach for her middle school. At the district level, Scara is a new teacher mentor, has written theater curriculum, and facilitates the annual Tech Design Contest. Sly has been an educator for over a decade. She has taught music ranging from pre-K to high school. Playing the bell set in fourth grade sparked a deep excitement to learn other instruments and join band in the fifth grade. She became proficient at multiple instruments throughout her years in school. Upon realizing band was the reason she showed up for school, Sly found her path, never dreaming she'd end up a choir teacher, but truly enjoying it.